This is Cats Podcast, episode number 26. Welcome to my podcast, everyone. I'm Kat, I'm your host. I'm super happy to have you here today. I'm in Vienna at the moment, and today's a beautiful day. The sun is shining. There's so much more energy around compared to 2 months ago. I'm loving it. And since this is the first podcast in 2021, I want to send you some of these sunny vibes and good vibes, and I really hope you had a good start to the new year, and I hope you're well and healthy despite everything going on. So thanks again for tuning in. For those of you who are here for the first time, what is my podcast about? So one big part is freedom, talking about freedom, discussing freedom, and I have super inspiring people on my show. They share their personal stories that are centered around the value of freedom, and they show you that you can live in a different way if you want to, and if freedom is one of your core values, there are ways to live it and to express it and to follow that quest. But with my podcast, I also want to show alternative and more holistic ways of living and thinking. Because oftentimes we are not aware that there are other solutions out there and that we don't have to stick to this one way that might not work for us. And I've touched on holistic health and holistic lifestyle a few times. I'll link to a few episodes in the show notes. But, well, looking at it, holistic, what does this mean? It means that everything is connected, that we can't separate one part of our life from another. We can't separate what we eat, for example, from our health, and we can't separate how we deal with stress from the state of our mind. And today's episode is picking up on that, on this universal truth, and looking at it from the perspective of an athlete and yogi. Jonas Plass is my guest today. He's a certified Tantric Hatha Yoga teacher and Ayurvedic consultant, but he's also a former 400 meter runner, Olympic participant, and finalist in the World Championships. He was a member of the German national team for 10 years. So I would say it's safe to say he knows what the professional sports world looks like and what an athlete feels like, how she or he trains, and so on. And pairing this with his yoga knowledge and experience, he is able to see where there's unused potential in the lives of athletes, how they could perform better when they were able to make the link between what they did outside their training sessions and what impact this has on their bodies, minds, performance, overall health and life. And he just brought out a new program. It's called Yoga for Athletes, and this is bundling all his knowledge and life experience. And of course, we're diving into that. We're diving into what's behind it and why it's more than just another element to your training, helping you perform better in your next competition. And of course, we're gonna talk about Jonas' own inspiring story and how yoga helped Jonas overcome physical pain. We also talk about, to just name a few things, the connection between yoga and Ayurveda and what Ayurveda is, the development of imbalances, for example, why traveling, training, and eating popcorn might bring you out of balance and what you can do about it. We talk about dis-ease as pre-stage of disease as we know it in the Western world. And we're gonna talk about mind, mindset, and how yoga can help you calm down and focus, and I'm sure this is something not just for athletes. So this episode might be especially for athletes, but it's also great for non-athletes or anyone who is looking to connect the dots and understand their bodies, minds and overall health better. I'm super grateful to have Jonas on the show because his own story is really showing that ultimately it's not about the sprint or the next competition, but about life and performance on a bigger level. So stay tuned and make sure to stay tuned until the end because Jonas has a special offer for you. And now, enjoy this conversation. Welcome to my podcast, Jonas. I'm super happy to have you on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm super excited.
So you're here to talk about bridging two worlds, the worlds of professional sports and the world of yoga. And those are your two worlds, which you are bringing together now in your new program, Yoga for Athletes. And before we dive into the details, I would love you to tell us a little bit about who you are so the listeners know where you come from and how long you've been an athlete and, well, then also what brought you to yoga eventually.
Yeah, long story, potentially long story. A lot of things happened along the way. So, yeah, like you already introduced me, I'm Jonas. I'm German. I grew up in the south of Germany, close to the mountains, close to the Alps. And basically already in my kindergarten days, I've been very active, very sporty. I've had the chance to have sporty parents. My dad used to play basketball. My mom was working in a gym as an, back then, aerobic instructor. I don't know if they still exist, but back in the days they did. And
yeah, aerobics, I remember that.
Yeah, the 90s. Yeah, and yeah, I also spend a lot of time with my grandparents. And my grandpa, he had a big backyard, and he basically like motivated me to try out different kinds of sports. So whatever I could kind of dream up, like we practiced it. We played soccer, we did high jump, we threw javelins, shot put, gymnastics, table tennis, ice skating, skiing, like really like all of it. And I think it really, like further down the road, it really benefited me that I had an opportunity to try out all of those sports at the age of 3, 4, 5, 6. But then when I was around 6, my parents said like, yeah, maybe we pick one of those sports. And of course, because of my dad playing basketball, me as a little boy growing up looking up to your dad, of course you want to do the same. And that's why they signed me up for a basketball club. And I basically, for the next 10 years, my life all revolved around basketball, playing with different teams, indoors, outdoors. I played in a few like regional selections, some tournaments here and there. And then when I was 16, my parents brought up the idea of me going to the US for 1 year. And because of my love for basketball, I agreed, and I wanted to become the best basketball player of all times. And I thought like, well, for that, you have to go to the US. So I did, but I would say only like 2-3 days into my year, I was told that I would not be able to practice basketball all year round or play basketball, that I had to choose different sports as well, because the school only offered basketball in the second and third quarter of the school year. So I had the first and the fourth. And then the first one, I decided to sign up for cross country. I turned into the second fastest cross country runner. And then I played basketball. I was average for American standards. I was definitely only an average player, which was fine as well, because then came spring. Everybody talked me into trying out track and field. And I definitely did find my talent there. I qualified for the Illinois State Championships and competed in the 100, 200, 400 meters. And my coach over in the US, he wrote me a note at my farewell party that basically said, like, please, Jonas, keep on running. I know you don't like it, but you have a lot of talent, and I would love you to experience one day how big this talent actually is. And when I came back, all my friends from before kind of moved on with their lives, and I didn't have too many people to hang out with. And in this, it was actually 11 months in the US, I've had an opportunity to hang out with my friends almost 24/7. So we went to school together. After school, we went to training together. We competed together in the evenings, weekends. We went to the movies, to the bowling alley. So I really love the community aspects of this. And then I was looking for something similar in Germany as well. And in my hometown, there was a team, a coach that had a team, and they practiced 6 times a week together. So I called him up and I asked if I could come for a tryout. And then after this one session, he was like, yes, you are talented. I would love to have you on the team. And then basically within a day, I decided, okay, like, basketball is now over, let's try this thing. I believe in the beginning it was tough for my parents, because I just switched from one day to the other. But I told them that I have more talent doing this. I tried the other one, I'm good, but I have more talent doing this. And that was actually
Was that something that you felt in your gut as well?
Yeah, in a way, yes, because I knew like what I did in the US was not proper training. The season was 9 weeks. So basically you start the first week to prepare for a competition that would happen 2 weeks later. And you cannot do much. Like, either you're talented and you're going to do well, or you don't have talent, but there's no time to train. So either you're good or you're not. And I was good even without training much. So I knew if I really focus on this and I would take the time to prepare for a big competition for whatever 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 months, I could be really good. And so I did have this feeling like I'm gonna be way better than the average. And then the first year I was still trying out, because the team I joined was a decathlon kind of team. So I did a little bit of long jumping, a little bit of shot put. But then my coach said after a few months, like, yeah, you are made for 400 meters. So then I focused on that. And then I only had like the whatever it was, 4 or 5 months. To really prepare for a 400 meter event. And I took second place at the German Youth National Championships. And then the following year was my first junior year. And that year I actually prepared for it for 10 months and I won it. Like, that was 2006. Yeah, 2006. So my first junior year, I won the national junior championships. And then the following year, they kind of selected me for the national team. And in my third year, I actually went to world championships to Japan with our like man's 4x400 meter relay. And from then on, I basically stayed in the national team for 10 years, competing in another 3 world championships, 3 European championships, and the 2012 Olympics. So the first years were really crazy, because like I wasn't worrying too much. I just went to one competition after the other, and every week, every other week was a new personal best, new personal best, new personal best. Just kept on getting better. Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, I can imagine. And how was that to be at the world championships at such a young age and, you know, progressing that fast, like getting there in a flash, basically?
How did that feel?
Surreal, to be honest. It felt very surreal because many of the people that I bumped into at those world championships that I met in the hotel on the bus, like, I knew them from TV, and all of a sudden I was not on the same level as them, but I was also a participant in the same competition. And it felt more like I was given a wild card to be there. So I, on one hand, I knew I deserved it. I worked hard for it. I did have some talent. I was 21. But then I was sitting there, like, one of my relay mates, he had won a silver medal in the world championships a few years before. And all of a sudden, he's one of my teammates. He was, let me think, he was 11 years older than me. And from before playing basketball, I was used to having my teammates being either a year older or a year younger, but never like kind of like big brother, 11 years older. And I was traveling with them and they had so much experience. And I also, one day I was in the bus sitting next to Asafa Powell. For those of you that don't know Asafa Powell, it was basically the number one Jamaican 100 meter runner before the generation of Usain Bolt. And I was sitting next to him, talking to him as he was eating his burger, and he offered me a bite. And I was just like, what is happening here? I don't belong here. So it was crazy. It was definitely crazy. And I think on top of it, it was also something that I never experienced at any other world championship, is just the audience and the culture in Japan, because they would see our buses. They were printed with Osaka World Championships. And whenever somebody in the street saw the bus, they would stop with kids and just wave. And or you go somewhere in a shopping mall and you had your tag, your accreditation, they would see you, they would know you're like pro athlete, and they would just, even without knowing you, they would walk up to you and say, can I take a picture with you? And that was something that was very, very new to me, that people just walk up to you and want to take pictures with you. Very fascinating times back then, definitely.
Yeah, it sounds like that. Like a really intense few years, I guess. But so all in all, you have been on the national team for 10 years, right?
For 10 years, yeah. I picked up running, 400 meter running. And 2 years later, I joined the national team. So I was a professional runner for 12 years, and 10 out of those 12 as part of the national team. Sounds crazy. When I say it like this, it sounds crazy. But while you're in there, you're just like 1 year after the other, like ticking boxes, like season number 3 in the book, season number 4. And in a way, you already know, like, okay, there's a limit to this as a professional athlete. You just try to hang in there as long as you can. But especially as a sprinter, you know, like, you will peak at around 25, 26, and then let's see how many seasons you can do after that. So there is already like a little bit of time pressure. Now looking back, those years went by so fast. But while you're right within and in them and experiencing them, and every single training session, every warm-up, every coordination exercise you do, it's like, it feels like a very, very long time, especially when the practices and the sessions get tough. Then they are never ending.
Yeah. And so how did you get on? So you said world championships at a really young age, and then you went even to the Olympics. Now, looking back, how do you perceive your athletic career? And then at one point, yoga entered. I think yoga entered when you were still competing as an athlete, right?
Yeah. How do I perceive it? So I see it now as different phases. What I basically explained before is the first phase where I didn't know what was happening. my coach just wrote my training plans for me. And I knew, especially after those first world championships, I knew, okay, if I follow his instructions, I'm going to have these kind of experiences on a regular basis. So I trusted him, and we actually worked together for the entirety of the 12 years. I think that's also something that's very uncommon, because usually, like, you have a not so good year and you look for a new coach, and then you switch and you try out new things. But I said, like, we already have a few years of experience. Like, if there's a not so good year, then there's also some learnings and teachings hidden in that. And if I were to go to a different coach, we would start from scratch again. So I always knew what I had in him, and also the willingness to grow together as kind of a coach and athlete team. And he also pushed me to become more self-reliant in a way, to do my own research, to learn. So over time, it kind of transitioned from, in the beginning, him writing training plans, sending them to me, giving them to me, and me just doing them. And then there was the second stage where I had made already my own experiences. I knew what was working, what was feeling good, was not feeling good. I also did some reading and studying myself. So I started questioning. He sent me the sessions and I said, like, nah, I don't think that's good. No, I don't want to do it this way. I want to do it that way. So this middle part of my career was kind of like a bargain in a way. Like, he gives me something and I like some back and forth. And then the last years, that's like also when yoga. And the last section, the last years, that was also when yoga entered the scene. It was the complete opposite, because I was basically writing my training plans. And I said, like, oh, we've done this in the past, and I think now we have to do it like this and that, and here, yoga. And then I put it everything together. I even put references, like, this was written in this study and that study in this book. And then I send it to him. And then he said, like, this looks great. If you feel this is the right way, then do it. But maybe on that Thursday, instead of 8 times 600, I would do 5 times 500. And then I would say, why? And then he would explain, and I go, okay, you're right. And that's how the last roughly four years of my career were like. And that was great. And such an amazing learning experience for me, not only as an athlete, but as a, well, in a way, as a human. It sounds big, but, and I think I also took some of this into the way that I teach yoga. I like people to understand what they're doing. And especially in sports, and in a way in yoga as well, you have the teacher, and the teacher is like sacred. Whatever he or she says, the student just follows. But I'm different. I always think, because from my own experience, I want to understand what I'm doing. So I always give my students some background knowledge. We're doing this because in my experience, that makes it so much more effective. If you're like mentally like understanding, and yeah, there's a point to it, that is why we're doing it, then you're not just following the instructions, you know why you're doing it, and it will help the overall experience and efficiency and effectiveness of what you're doing. Yeah. And yeah, like I mentioned, because you brought it up, the yoga. So when did yoga enter my life? That was around 2012. Actually, it was the fall of 2012, because at that time I had finished my university career, if you want to call it that. I just about a month before the Olympics, I had handed in my master thesis. And then after the Olympics, that was August, I moved towns. I started working in a company in part-time. So I would always work in the mornings, 4 hours, usually from 9 to 1, when everybody went on lunch break, I would go home, grab something to eat on the way, and then go off to practice. And I had also picked up another like long distance online BA program. So I would spend the evenings sitting there with my computer for another 3 to 4 hours, basically every day. So all of a sudden, I spend 7 to 8 hours a day sitting around, and my body was not used to that. And I started getting low back problems. And my girlfriend at the time, she suggested to just give yoga a try. And at first, I was not really convinced, but I said, well, I have to do something. So I started looking around, looking what the yoga studios here had to offer. I found that yoga studios for what I was looking for was a little bit too expensive for me. So I joined like university classes where I could basically get a semester pass for 30 euro. So I started doing yoga once a week. It was always Thursdays, the days that I had off. So at that time, we had changed my work hours a little bit. So I would always do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in the mornings, Thursday all day, so that I could have Fridays off, because many times there was some competitions coming up or something, and I had to travel on Friday. So we said it's best that I get my work hours done before Friday, that I could actually take 3 days off. So my day without training was a Thursday. So I spend all day, 8 hours in the office. And then afterwards I came home and I was never really like feeling it. I didn't really want to go to the yoga class. I just wanted to hang out, to chill at home. But I never skipped a class. I always went, and it did help not only my back, but I noticed already that something else kind of shifted. Like every time I came back, I was super happy that I had actually went and that I joined the classes. I was incredibly stiff. I was the only guy. Like I hated it while I was doing it, but afterwards there was this kind of glow. I was just sitting on the couch making like a cup of green tea, and I had this feeling like something is happening with me, and I wasn't able to explain it. And yeah, like I kind of tried to hold on to it, and additionally my back pain went away. And then for 4 years it was basically an on and off relationship. Always in the fall, winter, I did have the time to join this yoga class once a week, and then come spring, of course, then after whatever that is, 3, 4, 5 months, when the back pain is gone, you feel like, okay, now I can stop doing yoga again. I'm healed. And then there was so much other training and stuff and traveling going on that I didn't feel like joining the classes anymore. But of course, the back pain always came back. And that basically happened for 4 years. And I already knew, like I probably already knew after a year of this, that once I give up sprinting, I wanted to dive deeper into yoga. Not to teach, but to learn, to find out, to find an explanation for myself for what it is that makes me feel so amazing. And then that was, of course, coupled with the fear of spending an entire winter in Germany. I'm very, very weather sensitive. And throughout my running career, we would always go to Florida, South Africa, some warm places in December or January that would basically break the winter into two halves, because like also psychologically makes it a lot easier. Like the winter, like you're getting out of late fall. Yeah. You're getting out of late fall and you know, come on, bear with it. It's just 6 more weeks and you get to go to South Africa. Then you're in the sun there for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And you come back and it's freezing and cold, but it's fine because you just came back from South Africa. And yeah, then you already know, come on, it's just another 8 weeks and then spring is here and all will be good. So I was really afraid of spending an entire winter at that time in Berlin, because Berlin winters can be super, super gray. For me, it's not the temperatures, the lack of light. So that coupled with my curiosity.
Sorry, which year was that?
That was 2016.
2016. And you were still active running professionally or?
I had already retired. I retired. I actually retired professional running on my 30th birthday. Like you have to officially retire because of like all the anti-doping procedures. And they need to know that you're not planning on competing professionally anymore. So on my 30th birthday, actually from my hometown in the south of Germany, I rode my road bike across the Alps to Italy. That was just like 270 kilometers on my birthday. I wanted my 30th birthday to be something special. And in the morning at like 5 a.m., I filled out the form, retirement form. I put it into my jersey, my bike jersey, and I arrived in Italy and I stopped at a mailbox and I dropped the letter there. That was my official retirement from professional sports. So what
What a cool story. I'm glad you told us.
Yeah. Yeah, and then that was August, and basically in September, October, I signed up for my first teacher training in Bali, and that started, like, I left for Bali early January, and at the time I left, I really had no intention of teaching yoga. Not at all. Like I wanted to pursue my professional business career. I did already have my own company. We were working in communications, IT stuff. But yeah, I left for Bali for 4 weeks, and after maybe 2 weeks into the training, I noticed, wow, there's now, number one, I have all my explanations why it does feel so great. And number two, all this experience of professional sports, like it would have been a bummer to kind of put it into a box, take the box, put it into the basement or into the attic and not touch it anymore. There's so much experience there that I felt like I need to combine the two. I need to combine yoga and my experience from professional sports and share it with people, and ideally with other professional athletes, because, well, now yoga is becoming more and more popular with athletes as well, but still, like, I believe we're still at a point where we're just barely scratching the surface. It is still all on a physical level. Like, you strengthen this part of the body, you stretch that part of the body. I hear it and see it on social media again and again. People that say, like, oh, after my nice run, I did a few yoga exercises. And I'm always like, oh, I'm about to explode. Like, they are not yoga exercises. It's something different. I think there is a lot of work to do, which is great. And I think there is a lot of wisdom that it's still hidden from athletes, or athletes are not able, not willing to tap into that wisdom and potential as well. I believe.
So there are a few things I want to dig into a little bit more. So we're going to talk about more in depth about your new program, Yoga for Athletes. But I find it quite fascinating that you had this realization of combining your two worlds, the sports world and the yoga world, quite early then, right? So just, I don't know, a week or two into your yoga teacher training.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think, that's another great example for how often we know something, but it takes just so much longer that we are ready to admit it completely, I guess, in front of ourselves and then in front of others. What's your estimation of that?
Yeah. Yeah, that can be true. Definitely. But on the other hand, I'm just right now thinking of, there is this legendary Steve Jobs commencement speech. I think it has millions of views on YouTube, where he went to, I don't remember which university it was, where he held a little speech. And he said, you can only connect the dots looking back. So many times we do things, and as we go along and we walk on our paths, it feels like it's random things. But then when we stop and we turn around and look what we've done in our lives, then we can just notice, like, wow, this led to that. And like, this actually, like it's not just coincidence. Like, in a way, one led to the other, and that's how we end up where we are right now. And it's just like different building blocks coming together. And I think that's also the case for me, that I needed to go through those different processes to end up where I am today.
Yeah. That's always the journey. Yeah. So you just said there's so much more wisdom in there, and the athletes or the athletic and sports world is maybe a bit too hesitant still. So is it more a hesitancy, or is it something else that's kind of frightening them to dive deeper? What do you think?
Poof. That's hard to really say, and that's probably like there's probably different factors that play into it. Number one is probably like the athletic world is all about numbers, making everything trackable and objective, all about numbers, like a 30 meter dash here, how far can you jump, how high, how much weight, and you have to be able to put everything into numbers. And there's almost like a religion also built around science, like always, like everybody's trying to get the edge, like over their competitors, always looking into the latest like research and looking to just like to find something that your opponent has not found yet. But on the other hand, they're so focused on that they are not willing or not able to look the opposite direction. And yoga, and in combination with Ayurveda, they are both two philosophies that are alive for thousands of years. And there's a reason why they're still around, because they just simply work. If something doesn't work, it dies out. That is like evolution. If something doesn't work, it dies out. So it's still around for 5,000 years now or so. So there is, even though there is in many cases no scientific proof that it works, it's still here. So it kind of does work. We're just not able, through a scientific lens, to explain why it works. And I think for many people that are so centered around those latest studies and latest findings, that it just sounds like bogus, like some hocus pocus that they don't wanna waste their time with. And I've had like conversations with people and also like big companies that are around sports, and yeah, it's tough. It's a lot of like explaining to do there. They need to understand first what yoga and Ayurveda really is, because they also, in many cases, not in all cases, but in many cases, they don't want to listen. They think they know what yoga is, and then they already put it into a box, and they're not willing to really learn more. They've already made their decisions. So it is a lot of work, a lot of convincing, but I'm sure that over time, once there's more big names that are willing to say, like, yes, it was meditation. Yes, it was my yoga practice. It was my pranayama. It was my dinacharya, my Ayurvedic daily routine that supported me in my quest. And that is why I won those medals. And then once that happens, I'm sure nobody will ask for any scientific papers anymore.
Mm. Because we have the living proof that it works.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting how focused we are on numbers and science. And I mean, then again, what's science? If you feel something, that's your reality as well. Like, despite of numbers and facts and so taking what you've just said into account, what do you think, what is most needed or lacking in today's professional sports world that yoga and Ayurveda can provide?
Probably seeing the athlete more holistically. There is, like, for a long time, it has been all about the physical body. And over the last 10, 15, maybe 20 years, people have now finally understood the role that the mind also plays in the athlete's performance. That is the first step, but that we can go even further in seeing the athlete more holistically, that there's not only the physical plane, that there's also other, as we say in yoga and Ayurveda, that there's more koshas, that there's an energetic body, that there's the mind body. And also not only looking at the training sessions themselves, but that there's also a lot of things happening around them, basically. That you're not an athlete, only 2 or 4 or maybe 6 hours a day, that you're an athlete 24/7. Many people always say, like, oh, athlete is a 24/7 job. But then, yeah, like, how do you organize all this time outside and around your training sessions? What do you do there? And yeah, there is certain specialists. You have like a nutritionist, then you maybe have the psychologist you're working with, then you maybe go into a physiotherapist, but they rarely work together. So I think what is required is a protocol that weaves everything together, and that is something that Ayurveda can offer.
Yeah. There's still this, I mean, basically you can look at anything. There's still this deep or general compartmentalization or division between things. So yeah, a lot of the time we don't connect what we eat to how we feel. And that's just one of the most simple things. I mean, if you eat a lot of sugar, it's likely that you feel a kind of crap, maybe bloated, or you have just a spinning mind or something, or you have like huge cravings, for example. So I think it's super, super important to always see the connection, you know, and everything we do and everything we take in, there will be an effect in some other part of ourselves or our lives.
Yeah. And I would go even further than like your food example. I think the food stuff is something that many athletes have now understood. But even like on a rest day, athletes are like, whatever, like, I'm going to spend all day on the couch, watch Netflix. Like, watching Netflix all day or watching TV or DVD or whatever it is, it's not necessarily that it's about Netflix, but like that also has an impact on you. And even what you watch, and that is all like sensory impressions coming in, being processed in the mind, and that has an effect on your body as well.
Absolutely. So diving a little bit deeper in your program, tell us what your new program, Yoga for Athletes, is about, what maybe what your main aim with this is as well. And I'm sure that a lot of people, because you've mentioned Ayurveda, and a lot of people who are listening now might have heard about Ayurveda, but don't have a proper image in their minds what it is. Maybe they've heard, okay, it's something with food and it doesn't taste good. That's probably what they know. That was my impression a few years ago. Once, it was like a while ago, but I ordered an Ayurvedic soup and it tasted like nothing. I was like, oh my gosh, that's horrible. I don't want anything to eat that's Ayurvedic. But it's not like that, in fact, and it's much, much more than just food. So yeah, why don't you give us a little insight into your program and also why Ayurveda plays such a crucial role in it?
Yeah, then let's actually start with the Ayurveda part of the question. Yeah. So Ayurveda translates to the science of life, or the science of, or wisdom of longevity. And it dates back also to the Vedas, roughly 5,000 years. And the main idea is that there's three energies in the universe that create the five elements that we have. We have ether, we have air, we have fire, we have water, and we have earth. And in the manifest world, everything is put together by those five elements. And in our body, in our mind, whenever there's those elements coming together, they create forces. Again, three forces. Those are called the doshas. We have, and you might have heard that before, we have vata, we have pitta, we have kapha. All of them have different qualities, different functions, but we need all of them. And when we're born, actually when we're conceived, that is the moment where the decision is made, how they are balanced within us. Maybe some people have more pitta, other people have more vata. Maybe there's one dominating, maybe there's two dominating. There's a few people where they're all balanced even. And as we move through life, as we do things, as we interact with our environment, there's always the tendency that this natural constitution gets out of balance. Actually, dosha translates to that which tends to get out of balance. So for example, coming back to the Netflix binge watching.
Yeah, good examples.
or eating spicy food. Spicy food drives up your pitta. Binge watching drives up your vata. And that is okay. That is normal. Like, we cannot sit in a dark room 24/7 and completely away from any kind of influences. So that is normal. But then there's sometimes many factors that come together, and they both work into the same direction. And all of a sudden, it's like an avalanche that is taking off. And whenever we're too long out of balance, too long and far away from our natural constitution, that is when disease begins to manifest. So the first few stages, it's called Shat Kriya Kala, is the progression into disease. There's actually six stages, and the first three are natural. After a while, you'll be able to notice them in you, in other people, and you can take countermeasures where Western science would not even acknowledge this as disease. Disease starts later on when it begins to actually manifest in the physical body. And that is most of the times when it's already too late. Western medicine, in many cases, they just work on the symptom, but the disbalance is somewhere underneath. And that is the root. That's what actually triggered the disease in the first case to form. So
Can I jump in here? So if we have the scale from 1 to 6, and you said so there's an imbalance developing, and it's probably at stage 5 or 6 that it's turning into a disease that would be able to be detected by Western medicine. Do you have an example for an athlete? What could happen? So what could he or she, for example, live or do that causes an imbalance?
Like I said, the most important thing is already to know what action causes which of the doshas to become aggravated. That is number one. And like I said, it could be anything. It could be eating popcorn. Popcorn is dry. It's dry.
So if I'm an athlete and I do my training, I get the massage.
You spend your rest day. Yeah, you spend your rest day on the couch watching Netflix, eating popcorn. Then maybe you travel a lot. You travel from competition to competition. So travel also aggravates vata. Movement in general, like excessive movement, also drives up vata. And that is just, then it begins to add up, all of those things. Also very excessive training or physical exertion has an impact on your digestion, your digestive fire. And then it's just like speeding up the process. Those are definitely things. And just being aware of them, then you can, like, you don't have to change everything. Just being aware, like, okay, you do want to binge watch some shows, then maybe don't eat the popcorn with it, but eat something different. I mean, there's something that you cannot work around. If you're a professional athlete, you need to train.
You
need to move, and you need to go to competitions, because like there's no point in training if you don't go to places to compete. But just being aware of it and what it takes to counter it, because at the end of the day, it's all about balancing it out.
Yeah, that's a good example. And I think a lot of people can relate to it, even not being an athlete. Everyone can relate to lying on a couch for a day, watching Netflix, eating popcorn or some crackers. And yeah, so this is all adding up into one direction, in this case, vata. And then you want to do or to incorporate other elements in your life that actually help you counter that vata tendency. So maybe eating something more mushy and warm, that would be more like a whole different energy countering that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's also like, once I was able to understand this, I was once again, like a few years before with the yoga, I was like, wow, this is actually what athletes need. That is the general principle of what training is about. To when you train, you get your body out of balance, like you exhaust your body so that there is some physical adaptations happening so that you're coming back into a state of balance. And of course, that happens quicker when your doshas are balanced, because then the body can focus on the physical regeneration. When you go to a competition, there might be a little bit of a disbalance. And I mean, that's the great thing in this case about the English language. Dis-ease, like we have a lack of ease. Like it doesn't have to be like physically manifested yet, but you feel like something is a little bit off. So actually the language already tells us, even though it's not physically manifested yet, there's something off. So we're already lacking a little bit of ease, and you need this kind of ease to be able to perform, to give your 100%.
Yeah. And it's great that you take that word and explain it, because that was one of the aha moments for me as well in my yoga studies, that when I read it like this, like /ease, or not slash, but minus ease, I was like, huh. There's so much so much feeling and knowledge in, like, in that word, you're like, okay, that makes absolutely sense, and you know where it comes from, and you get a new, I guess you get a new relationship to disease, because you don't see it as this, oh my gosh, I have a cold, I'm lying in bed, or I have a broken arm. But no, it might actually start with, yeah, as you said, feeling a little bit off, feeling not 100% over maybe several weeks, or just like having a blocked nose or whatever it might be.
Yeah, absolutely. And many times when we look at health, it's like, at least from a like Western perspective, it's just black and white. Like, like when you think about yourself in your own life, was there ever a time where you said, like, I was in like complete health? Like, there was nothing that was bothering you physically or mentally? Like, I don't think, well, maybe that is just me, like as a former professional athlete, there's always something going on. So like you're never like fully healthy. There's always this slight imbalance, a little bit of lack of ease, always a little bit of disease.
Yeah. Mm. So if someone's interested in your new program, hearing all of this, how can you help them? How do you help them, I guess, detect such imbalances? Is it that they get Ayurvedic knowledge from your side, or how do you guide them through your program?
Yeah, so the program, what I'm generally offering is, number one, a regular yoga class already targeted towards the needs of athletes. That is the easiest way to get in touch and to already begin to experience the power of yoga and Ayurveda. It's just a group class where whoever wants can get a pass and just join, log in through Zoom. And then I do offer consultations, and in those consultations, it's basically somewhere around 60 to 90 minutes of interviewing that I will get to know the athlete, basically everything that is going on, starting, of course, with height, weight, so on, any kind of symptoms that they're currently like see themselves faced with. Then we have different questionnaires to find out about their natural constitution, so that we can already see what is the natural constitution and what does the current delta look like? Like, where are you? Where is there like a gap in between the natural constitution and your current constitution? Then we will assess if there's any ama, so-called ama, how the digestion is working. And based on that, there will be recommendations regarding food, what to eat, what kind of products, tastes, spices to better stay away from. Many athletes love coffee, but in most cases, I'm sorry to say, coffee is maybe not the best.
No, I'm well aware of that. Coffee lovers are like, no, don't say that.
And then there's maybe some recommendations for body work as well. Something that is great is like oil massages. And then really depending on the athlete, on their daily routine. And what I'm also giving them is a yoga practice, a pre-recorded class that is tailored to their needs. That they can practice, and ideally they should practice it, if not every day, if not every morning, then at least 3 to 4 times a week, where we can also address like some physical issues as well. Something that is very hard to do in a public class, because whenever you have like, well, more than one person you will be able to offer something that helps one person but might not help another person, and in a one-on-one setting. And that is actually how yoga was originally taught. It was always a one-on-one. You have a teacher and you have one student, and the teacher knows the student and gives the student exactly what he or she needs. And so by working one-on-one, you really have the opportunity to work with the athlete on all levels. Mm-hmm. And of course, there will be like a paper of all the collected recommendations. And I already know, as an athlete, like, you don't follow all of those recommendations, but only the awareness of what it is that helps you and what it is that maybe impacts you negatively will make a huge change. Maybe the athlete will still go and have his fast food, but maybe the athlete might not get the extra spicy sauce or whatever. That can already be an improvement. And it's just like an accumulation of small and tiny things that added up together will make a big difference. Definitely. And I think it's also something that goes beyond the athletic career. That's something that I got to experience in the beginning. I started with yoga because I wanted it to help me with my training, with my competitions, to make me a better athlete. But now I'm still practicing yoga. I actually got deeper into it. And from where I'm standing right now, I can say that it did not only make me a better athlete, it actually helped me even after my career to make me a better human. So that is also something that I'm wishing for with my program, that athletes don't just drop Ayurveda and yoga once they retire from professional sports, that they say like, wow, I'm so thankful. Back then I used it to become a better athlete, but it has so much more to offer, and it will guide me through the rest of my life. That is really something that I'm really hoping for.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
And I think most people who get in touch with yoga, well, if they get in touch with the right yoga, maybe I shouldn't say, but with the true yoga, they will stick with it because they will just feel the amazing power and magic that's in there. But it's interesting to hear it again from you and hearing your story, that for you, it was, as it is, I guess, for most people, first they get in touch with it on a physical level. It's often that we want to stretch a certain part of our body, or that we just don't feel like enough movement. That's how we start with yoga. And then hopefully at one point we discover, oh, there's more to it. It's actually way, way deeper. So maybe for the listeners. So we talked about Ayurveda. I think hopefully everyone's got a good first image of what it is and why you are so passionate about it. But now help them make this link. So why Ayurveda, but you call it yoga for athletes? Make the connection so everyone understands.
So the connection is that both traditions, yoga and Ayurveda, is rooted in the Vedas. That's number one. Yesterday, I actually watched a video by Dr. Frawley, and he said that Ayurveda developed out of yoga as a healthcare system. To me, in the context of professional sport, I actually see it the other way, that everything is Ayurveda and yoga is a part of it. Like, yoga is a tool, just like food, nutrition is, just like body work is, self-massage, just like a tool, like like herbs can be medicinal herbs. So there is a number of columns in there that are holding the house of Ayurveda together. And for me, definitely in the context of sport, yoga is one of those columns.
But it's probably more known than Ayurveda. And so it's a good idea to call it yoga because anyone knows exactly. What. Okay, good.
Exactly. That's why I called it yoga for athletes, because otherwise people just don't know where to put it.
Yeah. Or they will be like, ooh, what's that? Ayurveda? I don't know. Do I need that?
Yeah. Maybe over time I'll be able to rename it. But I have a little bit more work to do until then.
Let's talk about the mind a bit more. Yoga, as we know it, because maybe for the listeners, we've kind of connected over the same teachings and the same school on Bali. So we share that passion. And the mind plays a big role. I mean, it's ultimately about the mind. Yoga is about the mind. So how can yoga for athletes or just the yoga you're offering help people and athletes in these times with their mindset? Because when we chatted last week, you said, oh, there's, you know, athletes are preparing for a race or a competition, but they don't even know if it's happening. And with that, there's like the ultimate goal is breaking away. So how can yoga help?
How can yoga help? So for those of the listeners who don't know, what I'm teaching is tantric hatha yoga. So we have basically we're drawing from two different pools of teachings. One is hatha yoga, the other one is tantra. Tantra is more concerned about energy and the movement of energy, and I would kind of like push that more into the Ayurveda side of things, of balancing the body and everything. And then now we're looking at the mind, and that is hatha yoga. So hatha yoga, sometimes also under the big title of Raja Yoga, the royal path, is concerned with the mind. One of the most important books here is Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, and he defines yoga as yoga citta vritti nirodha. Yoga is the stilling of the fluctuations of the mind, basically making the mind be quiet. And I think for everyone, it can be beneficial to be able to quieten the mind. We're in a society right now where everybody's just hustling. I don't know, but whenever I talk to a friend, I call them up after a month or two and I say, how's it going? Yeah, a lot to do, but everything is good. Like everybody's just busy. I have a lot to do, but life is great. I have a lot to do. Like nobody ever says, like, I'm actually very bored. Well, maybe now with Corona, but even or with Corona. Relaxed. Yeah. So we're always up in our heads. We're always thinking here and there and different stories going on. And I know, like, I'm probably the best example of it. Like, I remember going to competitions on a train. I'm like used to be the biggest daydreamer of them all. Like, I could sit on a train for 5 hours, just watch out the window and have a look out of the window and have my entire movie going on in my head. And I think I'm not the only one. And does it do us any good? Probably not. Because when we're thinking, when we're up in our head, we're either thinking about the past, which we cannot change, or we're thinking about the future, which doesn't exist yet. So there's actually no point. We're never spending any time in the present moment. And being able to quieten the mind, to just turn down the volume a little bit, allows you to be more in the present moment. And at the same time, of course, it allows you to focus more. And focus is something I believe we're really lacking nowadays.
Totally.
With our computers, 25 tabs open at the same time, a video running
25?
YouTube. YouTube video running in one tab so that you can hear the video, the sound, while you're reading something else. And at the end of the day, you're like draining yourself without getting anything done properly. So that is something that everybody will be able to profit from, being able to quieten the mind, to be fully immersed in what you're doing right now. And of course, for an athlete, focus is more important than anything else. Like for me, as a former 400 meter runner, like I needed to be focused for every single step that I took. Like you don't do the first three steps like with the maximum explosivity that you have. Like it doesn't matter what happens on the next 300 steps, you're already like behind. So you need that kind of focus, not only in competition, in everyday training. And then of course comes with it a certain level of stability, because this yoga chitta vritti nirodhana doesn't only mean we're not thinking at all. There might still be thoughts going on, but we're not attached to the thoughts. So it is an ultimate realization of there is thoughts, there is a body, but there is a part of me that remains unaffected by whatever changes there are going on. And that is what you mentioned before. This, I start preparing for a competition, and right now during Corona times, I don't even know if that competition is going to happen. So in a way, this detachment allows you to be a little bit more relaxed, be a little bit more stable. You prepare for a competition for 5 months and then they cancel it, or they catch you with a positive corona test or something. Yeah, so be it. I'm not going to die. There's a part in me that remains the same, that is everlasting. So even though this is a more or bigger philosophical topic, over time, that is something that an athlete can profit from as well.
Yeah, and as you said, not being attached to the outcome. So if you can at least incorporate part of that, you know, it's not only about the competition, it's also about the journey and what I'm doing here and now and every day. So I believe that is true.
That is true. But I would never go out and tell an athlete it's not about how you do in your world championships. you're absolutely right, and I would never go and say it exactly that way to an athlete, but at one point the athlete will recognize, maybe when they retire, maybe a few years later, but it's not like I'm also not like thinking about this and that race. It is about the journey. There is amazing competitions, there's completely messed up competitions, there will be canceled competitions where you have to come up with a plan B. But if you look at it on a grander scale, it is about the path and what this professional sports career does for you.
Yeah, I like how you said that. Ah, so good. I mean, I believe that we could give a good image of what you were offering and of what yoga and Ayurveda are about and why they can actually help so many people. And Maybe if you're listening now and you always thought, oh, that's nothing for me, that's too shishi or too bogus or hocus pocus or whatever, maybe you give it a try. And it's, yeah, just try it. And then you can judge.
Yeah, and really there's people coming to yoga and to Ayurveda for so many different reasons. And you can have a room of full of 10 people and everybody comes with a different intention. But mm-hmm. then they are still practicing the same thing and everybody gets something else out of it. So it's not only that one thing. So I'm really like encouraging everyone to give it a shot, not only once, because for it to really land, you have to do it a second, a third, maybe a fifth and a tenth time. But especially people that are new to yoga, there's so much, again, in their heads, like, where do I put my foot? Where do I, and the breath and this and that. So it can be very overwhelming in the beginning, but again, it's not about like getting anywhere. So just go with the flow and enjoy the process. And there will be this one moment where it just clicks and you know, like, wow, this is amazing. Yeah.
Hmm. And I mean, you're offering this one-on-one and a tailored yoga class. So I think that's really also an amazing advantage that people have or people get when they come to you.
Yeah,
definitely not, because there is a difference. I know from experience that there clearly is a difference of doing a random yoga class online or doing a class that is actually fitting your needs. So
yeah.
Where definitely. Can people find you and the program?
Of course, online.
Okay, that's good.
the webpage, the URL is www.acebe.de.
So okay.
German URL. And then there's the webpage. There's a blog that I run together with my partner. I think by now there should be around 120 like in-depth articles about yoga and Ayurveda. It's has already turned into kind of a knowledge base. We're like cross-referencing. So for everybody that wants to learn about yoga, about us and our story and everything, there's already a lot to read. I can really recommend that.
Mm. Cool. So I'll put a link to your website in the show notes for sure. And so people can find you and the program. So you're already offering yoga for us.
We're already offering every Thursday evening, 7 p.m. CET, Central European Time.
Good. Amazing.
And also, classes are always being recorded. So for everyone that is not able to join Thursday evenings, once you're registered for the class, you will get the recording afterwards. So if Thursday evening doesn't work for you, if you're in a different time zone, you will get the video and then you can practice it on your own the next couple of days.
Amazing. Thank you. So I really hope that we could convince you that it's not just about the sprint, but about timeless performance. Thank you so much for being here, for taking the time and for your beautiful and powerful words, Jonas.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
been fun.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation and I told you Jonas has a special offer for you. So if you're intrigued now, if you're interested in having a snoop into yoga, trying it out, you can get 30% off your yoga class. Simply use the code CATSPODCAST30 to get 30% off your first booking. And this could either be a single class or a class pack. You find Jonas' offer on his website, which is www.acebe.de/y4a. This is www.acebe.de/y4a. And I've put a link to it in the show notes as well. So just go to the show notes, click on the link, and this will get you straight to Jonas' website. And once you're there, you simply have to sign up and you're good to go. This offer, 30% off your first booking, is valid until the 31st of March. All right. And if you like this episode, if you feel that this podcast is bringing something good into the world, then do me a favor and share it with friends or family members. Just send them the episode via WhatsApp or your personal messenger, or just send them a link via email. Just share it with them. That is helping me immensely to grow my listenership and to inspire more people to tune in. And for those of you who are listening on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, do me a favor and leave a 5-star rating. That would be amazing. Again, and if you feel really, really inspired, write a little review. It takes only a minute or two. First subscribe, then click on those 5 stars, and then just write a few words why you like this episode or why you like this podcast. Thank you so much. All right, wishing everyone a very happy weekend now, or a very good day whenever you're tuning in, and I hope to see you here next time. Bye-bye.